This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's talk about reckonings, shall we? Because we're going to go over a lot tonight. COVID, military stuff, there's going to be a lot of things. But let's just set this up with why we need one. Because this could be something that is hard for us on the right. It traditionally has been very, very difficult for us on the right. The right, probably you, probably me, if I'm being honest, at least in the past, we've seen ourselves as being kind of the adults, right? You have these rabid little Democrat commie children. They're always going crazy and trying to ruin things. Let's get things cleaned up, get the kids calmed down. Let's restore order and get everything calmed down. But this is the problem, you see. That mentality doesn't work when you're dealing with people who don't want peace at all. They have no desire for peace. That's something you want. You want to live peacefully with your fellow man. You want things to calm down. You want the fighting to stop. That's not how they look at anything. They want to fight about everything at all times. Because here's what you are. You have this magnificent country you've inherited. I've inherited. You know, our ancestors, our forefathers gave us this wonderful free country. So think of it like a big, beautiful stone statue. Right? George Washington. There's a big, beautiful stone statue of George Washington. You like it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful statue. You want it to remain. They want to tear it down. And they will chip away at it, blow it up if they can. They are constantly finding ways to attack it. So that means we have to fight. And when it comes to things like reckonings, we get uncomfortable because it almost sounds like vengeance. And then because the right tends to be more Christian-based, we think, well, is that biblical? Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Stop. We're not talking about revenge. We're not. Well, maybe you are, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something critical. We're talking about justice. In this country, justice seems to only go one of two directions. Either it goes to the right. Oh, wait a minute, did I do that wrong on the screen? Whatever. It either goes to the right against Republicans, or it goes down against people who don't have any significant power whatsoever. The real justice in this country never seems to go left. It never seems to go after Democrats, and it sure never seems to go after the powerful ones. It never seems to go up. It doesn't go left, and it doesn't go up. We have to change that in this country. To be in power, in government, you should be subject to the most severe punishments in this country. The most severe punishments in this country should actually not be reserved for gangbangers. And it's not that I'm a fan of gangbangers or anything like that. The most severe punishments in this country should be reserved for people who take power, who hold a position of power in the government, and then abuse the people with that position of power. And traditionally, nations in the past have known that's how it has to be. It should be the norm. You realize it should be the norm that you wake up in the morning and you pull up your phone and there's a new, oh, wait a minute, there's another federal employee going to prison? Hey, this guy in the IRS is going to prison. I heard the FBI agent's going on trial next week. That should be the norm. Have you ever seen a headline like that? No. And that's why a reckoning is so important. It is not about revenge. We have to turn this around. The people who occupy these positions of power in government, they have to know that someone will come for them if they do wrong, that justice, the legal system, will come for them if they do wrong. And right now, they think they're untouchable. And to be honest, to this point, they have been untouchable. You remember Kevin Kleinsmith, FBI lawyer Kevin Kleinsmith? He lied on a document so the FBI could continue to spy, to violate the civil liberties of an American citizen. He used his position of power to lie so the secret police agency could spy on American citizens. Not only did he not go to prison, he didn't even get disbarred. He's still practicing law to this day. Now, Kevin Kleinsmith aside, every single other FBI agent, I think there's like 35,000 of them, which is really sad, I should note. Every single other person who has that power in the FBI, has that fancy FBI badge, what do they think when they look at Kevin Kleinsmith committing black and white crimes and he gets off with nothing? What do they think? Well, I'll tell you right now what they think. They think, I can do whatever I want. As long as I'm serving the system properly, I can take my power and use my power any way I want. So no, if you're at the CDC and you lied about COVID, no, I do not think you should be fired. I think you should go to prison. If you're in the United States military and you've used your position in the United States military to enrich yourself, to turn things into some commie disgusting force, I think that you should be court-martialed, dishonorably discharged. Mark Milley should be recalled and court-martialed. He should. And many others should. Everyone responsible for that Afghanistan disaster, the international embarrassment. If they're still in, court-martial them. If they're not, recall them and court-martial them. This may sound like revenge or something. It may sound mean. I don't like this. I need to live in peace. No, you don't understand. These people took power, and for 4 years, and it's been longer than 4 years, but we'll just use the Biden presidency. For 4 years, these people have used their positions of power in the most evil ways you can possibly use positions of power. Never to serve the country, only to serve themselves, reward themselves, and punish their political enemies. That's how they've used power, and the people who did that must be punished. Punishment is necessary. Without punishment, you cannot preserve and protect a free society. And so that's why we talk so much about a reckoning, about making sure the people who did these crimes, who did these things, to make sure they are being held to account. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We'll be back. Well, there's a lot going on in the world. Obviously, we had a great election, but none of that changes the fact that the biggest thing going on the planet is Western governments turning their guns inward against their own citizens. It is the overarching story of our lives and maybe for the duration of our lives. That's what we're up against now. Joining me now, somebody who has exposed much of that from within our government. Friend of mine, always love having her on, Miss Julie Kelly. Go subscribe to her Substack called Declassified. You will learn so much. Julie, speaking of the government pointing its guns inward, what are you hearing about potential pardons for these wonderful January Sixers who've been abused by their own government?
So, Jesse, I think, you know, there were a lot of internal and obviously open debate as to what a pardon would look like. Donald Trump talked about pardons on the campaign trail. I think his base of supporters is expecting broad-based, if not blanket, pardons. But I will say, thank you, Joe Biden, to the extent that there's any good news to come out of his 11-year clemency for his own son. It is that a blanket pardon for J6 defendants, those who have been convicted and those who are just facing charges right now, I think makes it very easier, much easier for the president to do the same for these J6 defendants, regardless of the nature of their charges or the accusations against them.
Julie, just to recap, because it has been a while since we've talked about this particular issue, what are the things the United States government did to these people?
Well, I mean, they've brought bogus charges against now more than 1,600 Americans, including the 1512C2 obstruction of an official proceeding post-Enron statute that was reversed by the Supreme Court in June. That means that this DOJ, Joe Biden's DOJ, and the DC U.S. Attorney Matthew Grace wrongfully prosecuted more than 300 J6ers by falsely using the language, the interpretation of this obstruction statute to turn otherwise peaceful protesters into lifelong felons. Now, they've also brought other bogus charges such as seditious conspiracy. You saw members of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers face those charges and be convicted by DC juries on a charge, Jesse, that has historically been reserved for foreign terror cells, ISIS members, Al-Qaeda members who are planning real terror attacks here or against our allies, not members of the Proud Boys who showed up, you know, at the Washington Monument, some of whom didn't even go into the building and certainly committed nothing close to an act of terror. So that's another one of the charges. But of course, as we've talked about for years, denying release of even nonviolent offenders, hauling them off to a DC gulag, solely restricted to four Trump supporters, asking for excessive sentences on even low-level offenses like parading in the Capitol or disorderly conduct. So there's a litany of egregious abuses by this DOJ, consented to by every single federal judge in Washington, D.C. This has never happened in our nation's history. And I think the president has a golden opportunity to right a tremendous wrong on so many levels by issuing a blanket pardon to all of these J6ers.
Julie, Jack Smith obviously is dropping the cases. It looks like Fannie Willis is going to not be able to prosecute her case. All that is well and good, but none of that changes the fact these evil people tried to throw their political opponent in prison. What can be done? What will be done to them specifically? Yes, I want things legally done to these people. What can be done?
Well, I think the special counsel Jack Smith and his entire team of prosecutors, both in the Florida case and the Washington case, both proceedings, as you know, I covered in person those hearings and I saw in action how Jack Smith's team also abused the process, misled the court. In the Florida case, Jesse, I think, and that's the classified documents indictment that was dismissed by Judge Cannon in July, after she concluded that Jack Smith had been unconstitutionally appointed as special counsel. During those proceedings, a lot of evidence of prosecutorial and investigative misconduct, including tampering with evidence, possibly destroying evidence, misleading the court and Judge Cannon as to the condition of evidence that was seized during the Mar-a-Lago raid and the raid itself, Jesse, the unnatural proceedings and deliberations that resulted in the authorization by Merrick Garland, he said, of that 9-hour armed raid. There was big dispute in the FBI and DOJ as to whether the raid was necessary since Donald Trump and his lawyers already were cooperating, allowing prosecutors and FBI investigators into Mar-a-Lago to look for more documents. The raid was never necessary. We were misled by the special counsel and the media about the nature of that raid, saying that they did contact the Secret Service beforehand. It looks like they did not, and presenting a very dangerous, not just blue on blue situation between armed FBI agents and armed Secret Service at Mar-a-Lago, but certainly the employees and others who were on the grounds on August 8th, 2022. So the DOJ could produce these optics of this FBI raid so to convince the American public that Donald Trump was harboring national security secrets and endangering our security in the process.
Julie, let's switch gears here a little bit. Potential U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi. Most people are not familiar with her. I obviously know Pam Bondi, or at least I know of Pam Bondi, but I'm not that familiar with her. We don't have Matt Gaetz, okay. Should I be doing backflips for Pam Bondi? Should I have cautious, you know, a cautious approach to this woman? Should I be mortally afraid of what a loser she is? Tell me about Pam Bondi.
So Pam Bondi, as you know, represented Donald Trump in one of the impeachment proceedings. She has called out the weaponization of the DOJ. She has threatened to prosecute the prosecutor. So that's very encouraging. I spoke with John Lauro, who was the president's attorney in the Washington J6 case against the president, and he gave a really glowing endorsement of Pam Bondi, knowing her for 35 years. That's on my ex account, Julie_Kelly2, the full statement that John Lauro made of his friend and longtime legal colleague, Pam Bondi. But I also asked John Lauro, who I respect greatly, why she had not made any comments about the political persecution of J6 defendants. Now, it could just be a matter she was never asked about it. She was never in a position to really make public statements. And so that's one area that I have found a little concerning, and I think others. But she is very loyal to the president. The president trusts her legal judgment, as do his team around him. I think that she will follow through on his marching orders related to the Department of Justice and FBI, which is cleaning it up. We want it dismantled. Of course, you and I do. Very encouraged, though, by the appointment nomination of Kash Patel as FBI director, because I know he will do that. But I have to believe at this point that Pam Bondi will follow through on the president's promises related to holding accountable those who have destroyed the public's trust in the Department of Justice and the FBI.
Okay. See, I feel better. That's encouraging. That is encouraging. I was extremely... Go ahead.
That's what younger sisters are for. I'm here to make you feel better, Jesse. That's what mom told
That's
me
not
to
right.
do.
That's not right. All right, so Cash, is he going to get through, Julie? Because I agree. I'm thrilled it's going to be Cash, and we all know what that man's capable of, but... the fact that he's capable of and has a desire to do things like clean out the rot lead me to believe I don't like his chances. Talk me off the ledge.
Right. And I mean, I think also we both know Cash. Cash has had a front row seat since 2017 when he and Devin Nunes uncovered and blew open FISA Gate, Russia Gate. And Kash Patel has seen the dirty dealings of this FBI and DOJ for nearly a decade. That's why you see the meltdown by the Never Trumpers and the Democrats and the news media, because they know he knows where all the skeletons are hiding. He knows the dirty rats, not just at FBI headquarters in Washington, but that have infected all 56 FBI field offices. And he is so smart. Of course, he's been a public defender and he's been a federal prosecutor, a top investigator for Congress, and of course, an aide at the department, top aide at the Department of Defense. So no one better poised, better informed, and capable of dismantling this corrupt FBI. And also, I think he, more than anyone, will follow through on the criminal consequences for those who have brought these indictments, weaponized the DOJ and FBI against not just Donald Trump, his associates, his family, his businesses, and of course now more than 1,600 January 6 protesters.
No doubt about it. Julie, my younger sister, thank you, ma'am. I appreciate it. All right. We're not even close to being done. Hang on.
Generals with stars on their shoulder who are cowards, who ultimately wouldn't stand up to the ideologies being rammed down the throats of our leadership. They never stood up and said, nope, hey, you know, women in combat's not going to work very well. They're not going to stand up and say, we're not going to do this trans stuff. They didn't stand up and say, hey, we don't need your CRT and DEI. It causes division inside our ranks. It only creates skepticism and animosity. And no one ever threw their stars on the table, said, we're not doing it. It's how the military allowed itself to go woke. You're right, because there were cowards in camouflage who wouldn't make tough calls or retire or call it out or resign and say, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, it's really important we get that guy in there. Joining me now, my friend Sean Parnell, host of Battleground Live, combat veteran himself. Sean, You got to see it from an officer's window, although you were one of the good ones actually on the ground fighting with your men. How bad the rot actually got is bad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's real bad. And, you know, in fairness, you know, you're right. I mean, officers have, and I've experienced this as well, there are too many leaders in the military, both at the tactical level all the way up to the strategic level, from lieutenant all the way up to general. There are too many officers in the United States military who are only concerned with their bow and never their weight. In other words, it's the people that are the ladder climbers who never actually are boots on the ground, front towards enemy, that end up ascending the ranks into these huge influential positions that make decisions about all the door kickers and warfighters below. So it's a huge problem, and it's part of the reason why the Department of Defense and the Pentagon and every service branch is in the situation that they're in right now. And, you know, really, Jesse, it's about leaders who don't have the backbone to stand up for their troops and ultimately what's right. And that's precisely why confirming a guy like Pete Hegseth is just so important, because he would be a Secretary of Defense who actually served front towards enemy in Iraq and Afghanistan as part of these wars and knows what it's like to be shot at.
Yeah, he does know what it's like to be shot at. And Sean, can you explain why you could, because not all these flag officers are lifelong pogues and dorks. A lot of these guys were, in their younger years, were door kickers themselves. But then, is it just the swamp, Sean? Is it just you get to D.C. and you get those birds on there, this couple stars on there, and you just forget all about the guys you used to fight with and fight for?
Well, I have a theory about this. I think that many people, like, I don't know about you, but I went into the military after 9/11. I don't come from a long history of military generals or non-commissioned officers in my family. My intention was to join for a career, retire as a lieutenant colonel or full colonel someday. I got to combat and I realized real quickly that was probably not going to be the case. Combat sucks pretty badly, that my nine lives were up. And so, you know, I was medically retired, so in many ways that decision was taken from me, but I was getting out either way. But my point is this, like, there's something about combat that kind of makes you, I don't know, it kind of makes you understand life in a little bit of a deeper way. You know, when life and death is on the line every single day, you know how fragile it can be. And so many people who've experienced the horrors of war, Jesse, tend to make their way out of the military. The tragic irony of that is that's precisely the type of people that we need in charge. By contrast, the people who often, you know, go to combat, like you said, pogues or staff officers, while they're necessary in many ways to support the door kickers and the warfighters, it's often those people who don't experience the horrors of war up front and up close and personal who end up staying in and ascending to these positions where they've never actually had a bullet crack by their head. You know, so I think, you know, I liken it to, you know, being an artist or being a painter, but never having painted a painting. You know, if you've never done that, can you really call yourself a painter? Likewise, you get these generals who are commanding combat troops who say that they were in combat because they served in a support area in Bagram, but have never actually been in the trenches front towards enemy. I mean, I think it's a huge problem, Jesse. And again, you know, why are we even having this conversation in the first place? It's because a guy like Pete Hegseth, who's an actual door kicker, he's an infantry officer, Jesse. He's been in these wars. He's seen the horrors of war up close and personal. And not only that, he's seen how terrible it is for people who come home. And I think, you know, that's the reason why people like us support his confirmation. But I think it's also the reason why there's tremendous resistance inside the Beltway for a guy like this, because normally, those positions are reserved for the experienced people, those flag officers that you just talked about. And oh, by the way, it's those very same flag officers that bumbled us into Iraq, Afghanistan, and now Ukraine. So believe me when I tell you, I'm completely open and hopefully Pete gets confirmed, because he's the guy for the job for sure.
Sean, I talk a lot about this poisonous little circle there, not just the flag officers, they're an important part of it, but the politicians in the defense industry. Now, obviously, a nation needs some kind of a defense industry, but but it should not lead the nation, and it most definitely should not have any say whatsoever in the foreign policy of a nation. But it's very clear, Sean, ours does.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it, especially when you have generals within the Pentagon, these flag officers who are in charge of acquisitions that grant these lucrative contracts to many of these defense contractors like Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, to name a few, these very lucrative Pentagon defense contracts. And then those very same generals find themselves on the board to the tune of $500,000 a year when they get out of the military, raking in the cash. That's a very real problem. And what you get, Jesse, when that dynamic is in play is one big corrupt self-licking ice cream cone where we profit off of war. Well, I mean, and you're seeing that in Ukraine. I mean, all of these defense contractors are happy as hell that we're at war in Ukraine right now, that they can make munitions and churn them out and give them to Ukraine and make more munitions. I mean, their stocks are through the roof. Well, President Trump comes along and chooses somebody like Pete Hegseth and says, actually, you know, under my tenure, under my presidency, no more flag officers can serve on the board of any of these defense contractors. And Pete Hegseth, I want you to actually ensure that the Pentagon passes an audit for the first time in 7 years. I really want you to reform the organization. That's precisely why you see the resistance to a guy like Pete Hegseth. That's precisely why you see the gross, disgusting character assassination of Pete Hegseth, because reformers, Jesse, as you know, are not often appreciated in their time. And as bureaucracies grow, they get more and more powerful, they get less transparent, and their first instinct when a reformer comes along is to protect themselves. And that's exactly what you're seeing the Pentagon and all these defense contractors and all these lobbying firms do against Pete Hegseth, because for them, the status quo means dollars and cents. It means a ton of profit. Pete represents a drastic change to that, and of course, they're resistant to it.
Sean, where's the money go? You brought up a great point about 7 straight failed audits, which is absolutely staggering. Seven straight failed audits, Sean. The money didn't disappear into the ether. Where did it go?
Into the pockets of these defense contractors, Jesse. And I'll tell you where it doesn't go. It sure as hell doesn't go to making the life of the warfighter better. You know, anytime there's anything cut from the Pentagon whatsoever, Jesse, it's always cut on, it's balanced on the backs of our nation's warfighters. You know, we're always cutting their pay, we're always cutting their per diem, but while simultaneously putting them in more and more dangerous places, that needs to stop, right? But it is the generals, and it is the politicians, and it is the defense contractors, and it is the lobbyists. Those are the people who are laughing all the way to the bank. And again, it's these people that are simultaneously afraid of a Trump presidency and a Pete Hegseth Secretary of Defense, because they know that those two people represent drastic change to the status quo, and they don't like that because it affects their bottom line.
Sean, is he going to get through? I got to tell you, man, he's, for me, maybe the most important one. And that tells me he has the smallest chance to get through. But I'm a cynic by nature. Is he getting through?
Yeah, listen, Jesse, I've known Pete for a very long time. You know, I worked with Pete at Concerned Veterans for America before he was Pete Hegseth on Fox News. Yes, I'm calling it right here. I think he's going to get through. That does not mean that the personal attacks are going to relent. In fact, I think you're going to see a slow drip, drip, drip against Pete Hegseth from now until his confirmation hearing. That's why it's critically important for veterans, for warfighters, for conservatives, for Republican senators to understand the moment that we're in, to understand exactly why this man is being attacked. And by the way, these attacks, this type of character assassination, Pete's a big boy. He can handle himself. But it affects his family. It sure as hell affects his children. That's why we have to rally around him to make sure that he doesn't have to go through this alone. The attacks on him, I can tell you, I know this man. I've known him for a long time. They are completely bogus. Like, there's no truth to him. They are fabricated out of whole cloth. And so Republican senators, I mean, you know the motivation behind this, Jesse. They're going after this man's character in the hope that a couple of Republican senators might not vote for him and then tank his nomination. As Republicans, for the love of God, we cannot allow that to happen. I mean, how many freaking Biden nominations got tanked during the Biden presidency. Those people did far more damage to this country than any Trump nomination will ever do in 3.5 short years. So there's not a single damn Republican out there that should be voting against Pete Hegseth or anybody else. We should not play the political, the rules. We should not play the game according to the rules that the Democrats set. Republicans need to saddle up and vote for Pete Hegseth because this guy is the answer to a lot of the Pentagon's problems.
John, you are the man. Thank you, my brother. All right. Not just the military that needs a reckoning. Some evil things were done to this country during COVID. Let's talk to Dr. Michael Schwartz about that next.
The thing that went right was the investment over decades in the basic and clinical biomedical research that allowed us to make a vaccine in unprecedented time of less than a year that turned out to be safe and highly effective.
They are safe and so effective.
We know that vaccines are safe and effective.
The data is so compelling that these vaccines are safe and effective.
This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick.
So it's really quite safe for you, the vaccinated person. It's not safe for the unvaccinated person, especially if that person is taking off their mask.
If you are unvaccinated, we would recommend not traveling.
Remember all those lies. I have not forgotten. I've not forgiven, mainly because nobody has asked for my forgiveness. Joining me now, Dr. Michael Schwartz, author of the book Vaccine Fiction, which I would highly recommend you go pick up. Doctor, what were the biggest lies that we were told about the vaccine? Please take your time. You may need an hour.
We would need a few hours, Jesse. I got to tell you, we were the first company to do a COVID test in the state of New Jersey. I had 19,000 patients. We did 44,000 of them on multiple states. And, we saw the data wasn't matching what these folks were saying right from the start. Now, talk about lies. I wanted to jump through my TV every time somebody gave a press conference and talked about this because the data never matched what they were saying, what we were seeing on the ground, right from how testing works, going through the numbers about the mortality rates. We predicted the mortality rate of COVID was going to be 0.01% in April of 2020. So we could go down the list. Now, we're into the vaccines. The government data is out there, but nobody wants to talk about it. And Harvard agrees with me that only about 1% of what's out there actually makes it into the database. So when you look at the numbers and you see 40,000 people at least dead of the shots, multiply that by 100 and you get the real number. The amount of myocarditis, pericarditis, anaphylaxis, and when you see it according to the different shots, I get tired of these people in the government talking about vaccines because they're misleading the people right off the bat. First of all, these mRNA shots should never have been called vaccines. When you say that to somebody who's 70, 80, 90 years old, they think inoculation, they think lifetime immunity, polio, lifetime, Hep B, 10 years. They don't think what it really does, 120-day antibody response like a flu shot. I mean, that's just inappropriate right off the bat. So we could go down the list, Jesse, but I mean, the list is so long, it would take days.
Doctor, I need you to, let's focus on that last part really quickly because there are a lot of people like me who don't have the intelligence to understand specifically what you just said. Why is the COVID vaccine not considered a vaccine? What is all this antibody stuff? I slept through chemistry. Explain.
You've got different types of vaccines or what you call shots here. You've got live attenuated. That's what we use in polio. You've got viral vector. These are older technologies. When you look at the mRNA technology, this was never rolled out. This was a mass experiment on the whole of the world back in 2021. So when they use the words vaccines I don't like to call them that just because it's misleading to older people, what they're used to back in the day, those polio shots. I can't stand when someone comes out and talks about RFK and people people like that and say, oh, they're going to bring polio back. It's completely different technology. You're comparing apples to oranges. So when you're telling, when you're using the word vaccine, most people think of long-term immunity. That live attenuated technology that we've been using for years in the polio shots, for instance, works very well and it's pretty safe. If you look at what Novavax just came out with, Novavax came out with a COVID shot and it virtually has no issues, but it's live attenuated technology. The mRNA technology is completely new. It's something we've never used until COVID.
Okay, doctor, one thing that I will never forget in my life is the ridiculous concept of social distancing. And I don't even understand any of this virus stuff, but I know when I'm standing on footprints in the grocery store, 6 feet behind the person in front of me, and I'm paying, and he's got this little plastic thing. I know a scam and an idiocy when I see it. Can you talk about all that?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. I mean, you know, it's one of the, I wrote a book before vaccine fiction. It's called Fauci's Fiction, not about Fauci, but it tells you all the data that we saw in the beginning. And that what it goes over that, the social distancing, talks about particle size. Look, the size of COVID is 0.1 micron, okay? It's about the same size of influenza A. The masks that we were wearing, second dumbest thing I've ever seen in my lifetime. If you are in an enclosed environment, you are just as susceptible of getting flu A, you're as susceptible of getting any viral a pathogen like RSV, and then there's bacterial pathogens. We don't wear surgical masks for viruses. It's just something we don't do. So when I was in the grocery store and I saw those ridiculous, you know, I still have them in my grocery store now with those plastic things where I got to hand the guy the money through the slot. It's just so ridiculous. Just give me, you know, an hour on TV in April of 2020 when this thing came out, we would have explained all this to the public. That's why I think the media is culpable here. The government's culpable. They've just done things that are anti-science. I quote somebody, Dr. Lydia Baruba, in my book from MIT. Just the breathing alone in a room with high-speed cameras, you saw the spread of particles was 27.2 feet, not 6 feet. We're just making up numbers at this point, which now the government admitted. But we, my point about, you know, Fauci's fiction and vaccine fiction was we were telling people this, so early on, April, May, June of 2020, we could have prevented all these businesses from shutting down, suicide rates from going up, kids from being out of school. There's so much that we could have stopped. And yeah, you're right, Jesse. When you say scam, to purport that, to run with these narratives for as long as we did and then control an election with mail-in ballots, it's preposterous what the world did.
Okay, doctor, could you maybe help me understand why the lies were so pervasive? Because that's one thing that still hits me so hard. I guess I was just naive, but doctors, I realize doctors are not saints as soon as you get that PhD, but doctors in general, I had always looked at as people who may get things wrong but care about your health. But the medical industry lies were so widespread from the most prestigious organizations. It honestly, it soured me on the entire medical profession. That's where I still stand today.
I don't blame you. I had a conversation with a medical student early during this when the vaccines first came out. And I said, this is what we're seeing in the office. There's these, you know, we don't use the word breakthrough cases because everybody's catching this. You can get it. You can give it whether you've been shot up or not. It doesn't matter. What the government's saying is false. And he stopped me and he said, you got to stop talking like that. You need to go along with this. And I said, why? And he said, we're going to lose credibility if we don't all get together and get behind this. And I said, that's the wrong way to do medicine. Look, we never required a mask in our offices ever. If the government wants to come after me, go ahead. But it's just ridiculous. It's anti-science. It's something we don't do. Look, I never not recommended a shot because we thought there'd be issues from it. So if you go put yourself in my shoes, we never recommended a shot for two reasons. One is they don't work. You get 120-day antibody response from it, which we can get into. And two is you didn't need it. We didn't lose one patient in the entire time we treated for a year leading up to the shots when they came out. So if you were one of my patients said, do I need this shot? The answer was a laughable no. You don't need it. It doesn't work and you don't need it. So those are the only basic reasons why you don't. Why would I give you something experimental for something that doesn't work and something you don't need? Now we're starting to see the issues from this experimental technology. Now we're starting to realize that it causes an inflammatory reaction in your body and speeds things up. It's the 20-year-old kid who would have a joint issue at 40, but now it's coming out early. It's the 70-year-old. It's the 40-year-old man who would have a heart issue at 70, but it's coming out early because it exacerbates areas of weakness in your body for something, again, that you don't need and for something that doesn't work.
For a freaking virus with a 0.01 mortality rate. That is all right, doctor. What do you think about this medical cabinet, if you will, Donald Trump is putting up. We have guys like Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, RFK Jr. is getting put into HHS. What do you think so far? Are you happy? Are you thrilled? Are you angry?
I was happy when I saw RFK. I'm not a fan of his politics, but as far as when it comes to medicine, I think he's got his finger on the pulse. He's done a lot of great work in his life. The ones that get me upset are Dr. Oz. I just played a video recently. He was taking a vaccine on air, a shot, let's call it a shot, you know, to show everybody, oh, these are safe and effective. What does that really do, Mehmet? I mean, and Dr. Jeanette Nashawat, I mean, she was, there are no words. I am not happy about her appointment. She was behind Fauci. She was behind the shot. She was behind the masking. The media was always about 12 to 18 months behind us in what we were telling our patients. And that was very frustrating for people like us who were trying to get the word out, but were being ignored systematically, whether it was the bans on, you know, books from Amazon, from the directive from the White House, or if it was because just MSNBC and CNN with those death counts were making people think that this thing was so bad that people looked at us like we had four heads. You know, we'd come out every day with a different grouping of patients. Sometimes we'd see 200 people in a day between our different offices or the places that we were going to and doing on-site work. And look, we were calling patients every night, recording symptomology. I have something called CT value. If testing a patient appropriately and using a respiratory pathogen, there's 31 things on a respiratory pathogen. And what we found, Jesse, was that the sickest of the sick always had a co-infection. Most people weren't testing for co-infections. We did this because, and that's why we were the first in the country to do this, because we had used respiratory pathogens for years. We would train other doctors in how to use this, but most doctors don't want to pick them up. Number one, they take a couple extra minutes for the doctor. There's no reimbursement for the doctor, so nobody wants to test appropriately. So when you go to the doctor now or in urgent care and you're not feeling well, and they test you for rapid COVID, rapid flu, rapid strep, what are they guessing at the other 28 things? The sickest of the sick always had a co-infection. So we have CT value, which is viral load. We have co-infection, we have comorbidity, and we have antibody data on all these patients. Most people do not have that. On top of that, we called every single patient every single night when they had a positive result to record symptomology. Jeanette Nashawat did not do that. Dr. Oz did not do that. They didn't realize, I don't think at the time, that COVID wasn't as bad as it was, and they wouldn't have been rushing out these people, and especially children, to get shots. You know, they kept saying that the folks who were older, who were more susceptible, needed these things. They're the last people I would ever give a shot to. I've had more family members die in the last year, some great friends of mine who were all vaccinated, and they weren't feeling quite the same ever since they got the abundance of the shots they got. And a lot of times in the autopsy reports, you see things that are very indicative of what we see normally with these shots: abundance of cancer, rare cancer, onset of cancer, rare cancers. You see inflammation in different parts of the body. And a lot of these are caused by these mRNA shots.
Doctor, thank you so much. That was awesome. Appreciate you very much. Made me angry all over again. Don't worry. We're not done, though. We'll be back. Not revenge. I know that's the little headline we have on there, but not revenge. A reckoning. Justice. We must restore this country to being one where the people in power are also held to account under the law in the exact same way you are. If you cheat on your taxes, you will be held to account. They will find you. They will probably throw you in prison. Well, that's fine. You're a citizen. You need to follow the law. But the people who make the laws, the people who enforce the laws, the various bureaucratic agencies in this country, they should be more accountable than you are. The federal government should have a lot of people in federal prison who were federal employees. That's how you restore justice in a country. There should be an entire prison system designated for federal employees who lie, cheat, and steal, and commit criminal acts with their job. That's what we need. And hopefully one day, that's what we'll get. We'll do it again.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
About something about a comedic tone.
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.